Right, let's go to one of my favourite places in the county, which is Lullymore Heritage and Discovery Park, because they are our social enterprise this week in association with County Kildare Leader Partnership. And the manager is Ray Stapleton. Good morning to you, Ray.
Good morning, Owen. Thanks for having me.
No problem. I was only in Lullymore, I think, 2 weeks ago. I would go there maybe two or three times a year because I just love it. And I love the way it changes with the seasons as well. So we're heading into the October season now if people want to head over there and get spooked. But first of all, tell us a little bit about the Heritage Park.
Yeah, well, we're coming up to our 30th anniversary actually next July, which is hard to believe for us all, you know. So we're delighted still to be in action and doing what we're doing. So yeah, it's I suppose the park started. It was a local group got together led by Sean Judge, and they had the vision that we needed more sustainable employment. That tourism was a way where, you know, you could have a sustainable relationship with the environment, the bogs around us, and have jobs for the people in the community. So that's how it started. Very humble beginnings. A lot of people in Kildare will know how it's grown and developed. And yeah, we're lucky enough now we have 50,000 visitors visited in 2019. We've a lot of work to do to stabilise after COVID, but we are getting there, and there's a great team here.
Yeah, and it's on such a beautiful setting as well on the bog. There's so much for people to do and to see in the Heritage Park for children and for adults, and it has developed really over the last number of years.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. I think from around 2016, we went on quite a large development, the biodiversity boardwalk. Well, that was actually the first leg of that on across the Peatlands was 2013 it opened. And, yeah, that, I suppose that was the start. Really, we developed quite quickly. It went from 13 acres to 60 acres. And, yeah, it's really a celebration of the Bog of Allen and the people living around it, you know. So it's an experience, and there's lots for families as well. So, yeah, please come and visit.
Absolutely. And as you said, the setting up of it from Sean Judge and some of those other people 29, 30 years ago was that they were trying to, or they wanted to utilise that area to educate people about the bog and about the peatlands and the biodiversity that is out there, and also create employment in the area.
Yes, and we've done that. You know, like there's been a lot of state support as well, like the job activation programs like CE were fundamental in developing the park. And, you know, the work they've done, we'll never forget. And they're still doing now with Pubble and CE. But we're at the stage now where we're employing maybe 16 local people, a lot of students going to Maynooth University and that every seasonally. And we've got about 10 full-time employees. So, you know, that investment has worked. It's paid off. And I genuinely think tourism is part of the a huge part of just transition for the Midlands in general, not just West Kildare, but across the Midlands.
You mentioned that state support, obviously locally as well, with County Kildare Leader Partnership and other organisations here that are helping you in that way.
Absolutely. Like Leader were the ones brave enough to, you know, back innovative things that we've done. And one thing that, you know, a lot of people thought we were crazy doing was the road train that brings people throughout the park. I think it was the first one of those road trains in the country, a Dotto train from Italy.
And that's the most popular thing now in the whole park, I'd say.
Yeah, it's huge. And Leader backed that in 2002, I think. So, like, you know, the future is going to be, we'll hopefully get to a stage where we have an electric train going around. And, you know, that'll be much more sustainable. But, it's things like that, that when you're starting off, you need back and you need people to be brave and backing you, you know.
Yeah, As I said, it's one of my favourite places in the county, particularly during the summer. If you're to spend a lovely summer's day out in Lullymore, you can learn about the history, the likes of the Dorleys there, who were instrumental locally in the 1798 rebellion. The Hedge schools were there, and there's one of them that are set up as well. The little cottages around the place, and then the train that takes you around the peatlands, as well as having some of the entertainment for children, like the crazy golf and the pet farm, and there's a little bit of everything out there.
Yeah, I think someone on TripAdvisor said it was an eclectic mix. And I think that's a good description, really, because we always wanted to be educational. We want the fun element for children and for adults, you know. But there's also the really educational side, as in we want to tell a story of this area, and you know that's a cultural thing. It's evolving. We've a changing relationship with the Bog of Allen now, from an industrial outlook to much more environmental, and we realise what a natural treasure they are.
Mm.
So it's there's a lot in, and we've a lot more we could add to it, and we do plan to. But it's changing with the area, I suppose.
Yeah, and of course, just up the road as well is the Irish Peatland Conservation Council, which are also based out in that area, doing great work around Lully Moor. Just before we let you go, then, Ray, what have you got in store for Halloween and for Christmas, then, for people to come out and visit?
Yeah, the Halloween event is going to... We actually extended it. That's starting next Saturday. Saturday and Sunday, so that involves, we've lots of we've a coven of witches, and people will be familiar, there's a treasure hunt for children. The indoor play is open this year. It wasn't open last year with COVID, but the outdoor play is, and then the highlight of the Halloween event is the terror train, where you have to look out for zombies approaching the train. So yeah, it's really good fun. It's got a great following, you know, and yeah, it's a great family day out. So
Absolutely. That's
starting next weekend, and then we're not open on the weekdays from the 24th to 28th, but we're back open for the midterm 29th to 4th of November, and it's all bookable online on the website.
On the website. Great stuff. Yeah. Manager of Lully Moor Heritage and Discovery Park, Ray Stapleton, thanks for taking our call this morning. And thanks to County Kildare Leader Partnership as well for facilitating the interviews as part of our showcasing of social enterprises right around the county.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
All right, welcome back to the programme. Now, you may have seen this on the news yesterday evening. Taoiseach Micheál Martin launched an attack on Sinn Féin, accusing his political opponents of trying to shut down debate and avoid accountability. Mr. Martin said Sinn Féin had, in quotes, built its entire existence on honouring a campaign of violence, but now attacks and sues anyone who claims that they supported particular actions within that campaign. In a response, a Sinn Féin spokesperson described it as bizarre and a fantasy attack, and said the Taoiseach would be better off spending his final weeks in office dealing with the cost of living crisis. Micheál Martin, of course, speaking as he addressed his party's annual commemoration of Wolfe Tone in Bodenstown Cemetery. And we have the audio from that speech now to play for you on the programme. Of course, Wolfe Tone, instrumental in 1798 from the Bodenstown Black Hall area between Salins and Clane. And here's what Micheál Martin had to say on a range of topics, including the history of Wolfe Tone, Irish unity, and then that what's been described as an attack on Sinn Féin.
Theobald Wolfe Tone is one of the greatest figures of Irish history. This place is rightly seen as hallowed ground. Yet he died believing his cause was lost, and his name was nearly forgotten for many years. For half a century, this grave was unmarked, except for a badly rusted iron fence standing in the middle of an almost abandoned cemetery. When Thomas Davis visited here in 1843, he wrote a long and mournful poem, which included the line, "His name seldom mentioned, and his virtues unknown." Because of Davis and the Young Irelanders, a stone was erected here. Tone's works were reprinted, and he became central to our national story for every new generation. For Davis and his colleagues, Tone was a perfect representation of the new liberal republican spirit which was rising in Europe at the time. He showed us an Irish identity based on challenging ideas which allowed for genuine diversity, providing an essential link between an ancient nation and a modern vision. Tone was the first and most important leader of Irish republicanism. Together with the United Irishmen, he helped Irish nationalism to evolve beyond its focus on figureheads towards a concept of a country defined by its people in all their diversity. He lived in a world which has long gone, but his spirit and ideas are actually more important today than they have ever been. Tone was no narrow, inward-looking or tribal nationalist. His entire adult life was devoted to seeking to direct his country towards a more inclusive society, a society which could define itself beyond communal barriers, a society which could feel empathy for others, and a society which embraced an international commitment to the rights of all. He was born into one very distinct group in Irish society, but as a young man he came to question the idea that there was no shared community of interests between all parts of Irish society. Before Tone was a revolutionary, and before he embraced republicanism, he was first of all a campaigner for building links across sectarian divides. As the secretary of the Catholic Committee, he worked to build alliances in favour of removing legal discrimination against people whose religion he did not share. At that time, in the early 1790s, he wrote a pamphlet which was radical, not just in calling for emancipation, but even more importantly, for its call for every group to respect the views of others. In his argument on behalf of the Catholics of Ireland, Tone insisted that the foundation for all reform must start with respecting Ireland's diversity and acknowledging our shared interests. He said that we could never succeed. Ireland could never secure a strong and united future if any group tried to build an edifice of freedom on a foundation of monopoly. With this, he gave us a profound challenge, a challenge which must be accepted by any person who truly wishes to build a common future for all on our island. Down to today, this remains the single most important challenge to all who genuinely want to build reconciliation and a shared future on our island. Ours is a proudly Republican party, founded by a brilliant generation of men and women who had sacrificed much to secure independence for our country. Many of them had known as friends, colleagues and leaders the fallen heroes of the 1916, the War of Independence and the Civil War. What distinguished them was a belief that the cause of Irish republicanism must be served by a willingness to find new ways forward, that it could never fall for the false narrative of never-changing methods. And within this, they and those who followed remained committed to Tone's vision of an inclusive republicanism. And that is why in 1937, at a time when much of Europe was falling into the dark control of ethno-nationalism and extreme ideologies, our founding leader, Éamon de Valera, wrote and put before the people a constitution which gave explicit protection to minorities and for values like the rule of law, the separation of powers and international cooperation. It is also why our party was central to building a peace process and delivering an historic settlement which next year will reach its 25th anniversary. In the 1993 Downing Street Declaration, negotiated by Albert Reynolds, a very important statement was made about what the shared objective should be. It was not just about getting groups to abandon the illegitimate campaigns of violence they were waging in the face of the unwavering opposition of the Irish people. Far more than the absence of violence, the objective was, and I quote, to remove the causes of conflict, to overcome the legacy of history, and to heal the divisions which have resulted, unquote. That great challenge was at the core of the Good Friday Agreement, signed 5 years later, but the sad reality is that nearly a quarter of a century later, far too little has been done, and too much time has been wasted. Too few have been willing to undertake the basic work of questioning themselves and finding ways to build a shared respect across historic barriers. Opportunities to tackle disadvantage and to tackle sectarianism have not been taken and remain unfulfilled. There has been a lot of talk about unity and reconciliation, but very little work done to actually build the bridges which make it happen. We are determined as a party not to let the great opportunity which falls to this generation continue to be missed. We have to get on with the hard work of moving from talk to action, and that's exactly what we are doing. The Shared Island Initiative, which I established, is the first time in our history where there's a sustained investment to support vital North-South projects to build deeper connections and understanding. Projects that have been talked about for decades are now underway. The Narrowwater Bridge will finally be delivered. We have provided the funding, engaged with local communities, and will move forward with what is both a very practical connection across the border, but also a powerful symbol of our future. So too is our investment in the Ulster Canal, a project which reopens and makes accessible a resource to support social and economic development. We have put in place funding for a wide range of other vital cross-border infrastructure, making sure that profound challenges like meeting the climate, biodiversity and energy security crises are tackled together. An all-island network to support the transition to electric vehicles is being developed. An all-island strategy for developing rail services will very shortly be completed. And we're also investing in an all-island approach to achieving breakthroughs in cancer treatment and a range of other key research challenges. Through our investments, we are determined to show a new and prosperous way forward for all communities. The most inclusive dialogue ever between communities is also taking place. Over 2,000 people have contributed to the dialogues so far, with a real diversity of contributions. It's not about looking for easy answers, it's about trying to have a real engagement which promotes concrete action. And one of the great failings of the last 25 years is that very little work was done about doing the hard work of studying the differences, similarities and opportunities in practical but fundamental areas. There's been no shortage of people willing to make grand claims about services, but it is remarkable how little has been done to actually quantify what the current situation is on both sides of the border. And that's why we are already publishing the most detailed ever research commissioned on health services, trade, childcare, education and other vital areas between North and South under the Shared Island Initiative. To give a very practical example, research on education is showing significant disparities in early school leaving, as well as differences in access and approaches to supporting both achievement and inclusion. This is giving us a blueprint for the future, a blueprint for action, which benefits all on our island. That's real action. And central to our identity as a party is that we believe in the Republican vision of a country which truly unites all the people on our island, which respects diversity, different identities, and puts behind it the divisions of the past. And we believe that it is the duty of every one of us to do the hard work of building understanding, unity, and a sense of shared community. Anyone who sincerely believes in a Republican vision for our country should be appalled by the growing attempt to intimidate and shut down debate by one party which refuses to accept the basic accountability accepted by everyone else. There is something deeply wrong with a party which has built its entire existence on honouring a campaign of violence, but now attacks and sues anyone who claims that they supported particular actions within that campaign. It's not just the national broadcaster which has been intimidated. Political opponents are now regularly receiving legal threats for statements which no one previously thought could even be controversial. On top of this, there's now a regular pattern of aggressive management of the media, which means, for example, that party spokespeople are just withdrawn from any place they might be, where they might be asked questions, and basic inquiries are not answered. This is many things, but democratic republicanism is not one of them. We need a strong, independent media in our democracy, one which is capable of standing up to bullying and is committed to the sort of high standards of accuracy and balance which only professional journalism has any chance to deliver. Much of what we know today about our Gaelic and Celtic past would have been lost were it not for the commitment of the people of Tone's time who came from the Protestant community. For example, the first collections of our musical folklore and the saving of our national treasures of Celtic jewellery depended on the efforts of groups which certainly never fitted into a narrow view of Irish identity. And we must never allow this diverse background of our national identity to be forgotten. And we must never forget how the growth of Irish nationalism, the ideals which helped us to maintain our sense of community, have always drawn on a deep connection with the other nations of Europe. When Tone died, he proudly wore the uniform of the French Republic, a state which in turn honoured his commitment to universal ideals. It was this spirit which led the great generation which fought for our independence to lead us towards membership of the now European Union as their last act in public life. To them, the way to strengthen our sovereignty, to strengthen our democracy, and to build a more prosperous future was to embrace systematic cooperation with the nations of Europe. I think this spirit is one of the reasons why the Irish people remain amongst the strongest supporters of the people of Ukraine as they fight against an imperialist invader and fight for a European future. The history of Ukraine has been one of great struggle over many centuries to protect its culture and its sense of community. It was controlled by a changing series of empires, and it demonstrated genuinely remarkable levels of resilience to survive. Core to the fact that Ukrainian identity did survive was a national cultural revival in the 19th century, which was very similar to ours. It was poets and historians who gathered together their past and inspired new generations. The welcome which has been given to a people fleeing this terrible conflict is a moment we should always be proud of, even though it does create many pressures on key resources. This welcome is a fitting way for us to mark our own struggle for independence. And it is a reminder of the great values which we inherited from Theobald Wolfe Tone and those who dedicated the cause of Ireland to the cause of the rights of all people and cooperation amongst the people of the world. Gurmila Mahagov Galair.
And that was Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, of course, speaking at Bowden's Town Cemetery yesterday. Now, the Construction Industry Federation have today launched Construction Safety Week. They are appealing to any County Kildare-based companies to refocus on traditional nuts and bolts safety procedures with the COVID measures now firmly established. I'm joined by Director of Safety and Training with the CIF, that is Dermot Carey. Good morning, Dermot.
Good morning, and good morning to your listeners. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming on. So nearly 800 injuries, 794 were reported across construction last year, an increase of 4.3% on 2020. Obviously disappointing in terms of an increase, but due to the lockdowns, I'm assuming that was to be expected.
Well, we are disappointed that the number of injuries has increased, and then we do feel that part of that was obviously a big focus, and a big focus in Ireland in general with regard to managing COVID. The industry had developed a whole series of procedures to deal with COVID, so I think the eye might have been taken off the ball a little bit in relation to the standard, what we would believe to be the standard health and safety issues that confront workers on construction sites. So this year we're asking for members to refocus on what we said was the nuts and bolts of the standard work health and safety hazards that are common on a construction site. So we have five themes for the week. Well, we call it a week even though we're doing it over a fortnight. So we're focusing on things like work at height, which is the number one reason for fatal accidents in the construction sector, and things like safe access and egress, for just in relation to the non-fatal accidents that you referred to there. The most common cause of those type of accidents is people slipping and tripping and falling on the same level. So yeah, we're calling on all companies to get involved in this week, where there's a refocus on the standard health and safety hazards that are common on construction sites.
Dermot, you said you worded as taking their eye off the ball in terms of safety. Is that because the main focus was on the spread of COVID-19?
I think it was. If you cast your mind back to early 2020, and the country was wrapped with uncertainty in relation to how to manage COVID. There was a huge amount of work done within the workplace, and particularly in the construction sector, with the health and safety professionals that work within this sector, to develop a whole series of standard operational procedures to deal with COVID. So our thoughts are that that whole refocus onto COVID took the eye off just the day-to-day standard stuff. So Construction Safety Week is an opportunity for companies to refocus again back to where we know the accidents are coming from, and we have the stats. So it's an opportunity for companies to work with our workers to run various events. And I'm actually at an event down here on the site in the centre of Dublin, where health and safety has been discussed this morning. Today is the focus is safe access and egress, and that may not mean a lot to people not in the construction industry, but it's a very broad area. It covers things like getting to and from your place of work safely. So a lot happening over the next 2 weeks. So we have 5 days of activity over 10 days. So this week we have 3 days of focus. So today is safe access and egress. Wednesday we're looking at safe working at height. Friday we're looking at control of hazardous energies. That deals with electricity, utilities such as gas and high pressure water systems. Next Tuesday we look at leadership and safety, and on next Thursday we look at safe use of mobile plant.
You mentioned the staff there on the ground. What are they saying in regards to this 2 weeks and what they want the focus in particular to be on, or does it vary greatly?
It varies greatly. We have offered those themes, those five themes that I mentioned there earlier as the suggested themes for companies, but the construction industry is a very diverse industry, so it consists of contractors working in various different sectors, from civil engineering, house building and commercial and mechanical and electrical. So all of those specific contractors will have specific focuses. We don't mind what they focus on, so long as they focus on something and have a refocus on health and safety issues over the next 2 weeks. So if we have a website, on a couple of web pages on our website, CIF.ie, safety week. So there's a whole series of resources there and little videos to help contractors if they want to have a bit of resources and how to run various different events during this fortnight.
Now, you did mention slips, trips and falls, and the 5 years between 2017 to 2021, there were 702 incidents. If we look elsewhere, lifting and carrying between those 5 years, 560 incidents, and then falling from a height, 519 incidents, Dermot. So working at a height, you have said, continues to be the greatest causal factor for fatalities and then serious injury in the sector.
Just true. Work at height continues to be, or more accurately, I suppose, failures at work at height continues to be the principal reason for both fatal and serious accidents in the construction sector. So it's an issue we're constantly focusing on. Things like working off scaffold, working on roofs can be high-risk operations. So this is an opportunity to refocus on those particular issues again, and ensure that, you know, this type of work is properly planned, there are risk assessments carried out, and that everybody who is doing the work knows how to do so and do it safely. And indeed, the message to workers is, if you're unsure of anything, stop. You know, stop. Don't do anything that's unsafe.
Now, Construction Safety Week does run over 11 days. It's focusing on the five themes, as Dermot did point out: safe access and egress, safe working at height, safe control of hazardous energies, safety by example, and safe use of mobile equipment. Launched today, the 17th, running until the 28th of October. For more information, you can check out the Construction Industry Federation's website at cif.ie/safety week. And that is, of course, Director of Safety and Training at the Construction Industry Federation. Thank you, Dermot Kerry.
Kildare Today. With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare KFM.
Now, you're welcome back to the programme. News that is just breaking over the last half hour or thereabouts, and it's of particular interest for Naas because the town has been chosen for a pathfinder project to improve active travel infrastructure on the main street, including walking and cycle lanes to school, retail and residential areas, as well as bus stops, etc. And on the line is Green Party councillor and Lass Cathaoirleach of the Naas Municipal District, Colm Kenny. Good morning to you, Colm.
Good morning, Owen, and good morning to your listeners.
This is big news for Naas Town Centre in particular. You might tell us more about what this Pathfinder project is.
Yeah, thanks, Owen. Yeah, so the basically funding had been allocated for different active travel, walking, cycling projects, not only in Kildare, but you know, in other counties as well. Now, some of that money, unspent money, has been pooled, and luckily Naas has now qualified for one of these Pathfinder projects. So the aim is to significantly improve Naas Town Centre and reduce the traffic congestion with the efficient movement of people and goods within the town centre, improve safety for school pupils and enhance accessibility for those with mobility impairments. Now, ultimately, that will have results in improvements in air quality, noise and vibration, which will directly enhance the town centre. In particular, the part of the project proposes the completion of a 45-metre extension along St Corbin's Lane, which will kind of open up an alternative route around the town, including a renovation of Murtagh's Corner there as well. Mm. This isn't a new concept, Owen, because in July I had a motion at a council meeting and I was asking about that Part 8 upgrade for St Corbin's Lane, which was part of the whole shopping centre. So, you know, this was always in the plans for St Corbin's Lane, Murtagh's Corner, to be upgraded, but it has sat derelict there for so long. So
that's the old Sarah Flood site, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah. So, look, really, kind of welcome this whole project, that it will bring some investment into the town.
Absolutely. And I was only saying it on the programme actually last week, I think it was Friday, that it is such a shame to see that derelict site there at Sarah Flood's been unused for so long and just lying there vacant. So good to see that work will be done beside it along Corbin's Lane. Have we got a timeline, Colm, as to when this is going to start? Can it start immediately?
Now, the idea behind the Pathfinder projects, I do know that Kildare County Council staff were under pressure to get this, and fair play to them, because they got this, the Department of Transport invited these projects, so they got the information in on time. Now, just off the top of my head, I think there is a 2 to 3 year time frame on these.
Right.
Now, look, in fairness, we do know as well, let's be realistic, I was listening on another radio programme earlier today, Tom Parlin was speaking about tenders and how tenders, the prices are increasing, you know. So, and we do know this is having a knock-on effect, but really, either way that this investment is coming to Naas Town Centre is most welcome. It will also, hopefully, you know, The inner Kilcullen road, is that project is about to start before the end of the year. So that's to put in footpaths and cycle lanes out to the Kilcullen Road roundabout, and in the long, you know, and then that'll link up with the schools in Piper's Hill. Mm. So all of this, the whole idea is through a cycle connects. That there will be a lot more linkage and linking between these different proposed cycle routes, because in the long term there's cycle routes proposed for the Dublin Road as well, and hopefully someday a Grand Canal Greenway.
Okay, with that news then that's just breaking in the last half hour or thereabouts, Naas has qualified for a Pathfinder project which will see the upgrade of Main Street with improved footpaths and cycle lanes, particularly there, as we said, at Murtagh's Corner down Corbin's Lane, beside where the old Sarah Flood site used to be. And that is Green Party councillor and Lass Cathaoirleach of the Naas Municipal District, councillor Colm Kenny. Thanks for joining us on the programme this morning, Colm, and good morning to you.
Sports Review Monday on Kildare Today.
Yes, let's review then the sporting action of the weekend. And of course, the big news was yesterday afternoon. What a fantastic win it was for Eadstown GAA, and a dramatic victory. A last minute point from Tara Bedford gave them a 2-10 to 3-6 win against Port Laois down in Laois to advance Eadstown to the semi-final of the Leinster Senior Football Championship. Loads of messages coming in as well, congratulating them, particularly Maureen said, well done to all the Eadstown team. Good luck next Sunday. Mary was in touch as well, saying congratulations to Brian Willis and all the team. And another one in here from Johnny in Rathmore, saying it was a great performance over the weekend. So let's get a full-time report then from Tara Byrne, who watched this game yesterday between Eadstown and Port Laois.
It was Eadstown who opened the scoring inside the second minute with a point from Siobhan O'Sullivan, quickly followed by a Tara Bedford goal to leave them 4 points clear inside 2 minutes of action. It was the ninth minute before Port Laois were able to respond through an Aisling Keogh point. Eadstown responded through Aisling McGuigan before Grace Clifford made the score 1-3 to 1 point after 13 minutes of action. Things were to go from good to bad from Eadstown in the space of a couple of minutes. Again, it was Aisling Keogh on target for Port Laois. Her shot unfortunately deflected off Áineann Rathála, Port Laois goaling on 17 minutes to cut the deficit to 2 points. A further point from Leah Lockman on 21 minutes cut the deficit to the minimum, leaving the scoreline 1-3 to Port Laois's 1-2. Rallying before the half-time break, Angela McGuigan and Siobhan O'Sullivan pointed to leave Eadstown holding a 3-point advantage at the break, 1-5 to Port Laois's 1-3. With Eadstown enjoying the majority of the possession and dominance, they looked to make that pay early on. But that wasn't to be the case, as the sides traded scores through Shauna Jackson and Angela McGuigan. A further point from Grainne Moran left the difference at 2 as the tie headed into the 36th minute of action. Determined to respond, Grace Clifford netted for the Eadstown side after 43 minutes of action to leave the score 2-6 to Port Laois's 1-4. Determined not to allow the Kildare champions to seize control on their home grounds, Port Laois rallied and in a 6-minute spell managed to hit 2-1 to level matters with 10 minutes remaining in the tie. The first, the point coming from Grainne Moran before an Aisling Taylor goal on 45 minutes left the scoreline 2-5 to Eadstown's 2-6. A further point from Taylor on 50 minutes ensured that the sides were level as we headed into the final 10 minutes of action. Again, it was Eadstown who were left to rally. On 53 and 58 minutes, it was Grace Clifford and Abby Cahill who pointed to leave 2 points between the sides. But with a last-minute goal from Alison Taylor on 60 minutes, it looked to be Eadstown hearts that were going to be broken as they took control for the first time in the tie as we headed into second half injury time. Determined not to allow Port Laois to seize control late on, Eadstown looked to make the most of the injury time. And with a point from Siobhan O'Sullivan from a free on 66 minutes, the sides were level once more and it looked like extra time was going to be needed to separate the sides. But with the last kick of the ball, it was Tara Bedford who slotted over to seize the lead and the victory dramatically with the final kick of the game. Leaving 1 point between the sides, it was Eadstown who came through dominant on a final scoreline of 2-10 to Port Laois's 3-6.
Yeah, Tara Byrne reporting. Of course, Eadstown now face Tinnahealy of Wicklow this coming Sunday at 2 o'clock in Eadstown GAA. And after the game at the weekend, Tara spoke to the manager, Brian Willis.
I don't really know what to say, to be honest with you. That game was 2-1 and thrown, first half, second half. We were ahead and then Port Laois came back and they went ahead. So look, all I can say is the character shown by the girls was absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable, you know. The first half, I think, we could have been in one or two more goals up. We didn't really take our scores and we told the girls in the second half they're really going to have to dig in because this was going to be tough. You were never going to come out of Port Laois without a big battle, and that's what we got in the second half. But when Port Laois got that goal just near the end there, I thought we were in serious trouble. But at the end of the day, that victory there will do Eadstown and this team the world of good going forward. You know, we have that progression there now is what we've done this year. Last year we got beaten, this year we've won, we got that little bit of luck today, it was on our side and we got over the line. It's another step up the ladder. We got to move on and try and progress again.